was about to say good morning. We have these so often in the morning. I'm totally en route. Good afternoon. This is Hillary, and I thought we'd just take a quick minute and do a roll call. Let's start in the room, and this will also give you guys the opportunity to ping on your microphone. I'm going to start down at the end. And...
Trevor Timmons, Secretary of State's office.
Amber McReynolds, Denver.
Judge Choate, the Secretary of State's office.
Hillary Hall, Boulder County.
Connie Meyer, Morgan County.
We also have Stephen in the room, keeping us all on track in public. On the phone, I'll call off names so we don't have to go through that unpleasantness of everyone talking over each other. Fran? Long? Rudy Santos?
Present.
Hey, Rudy.
Hello.
Joyce Reno?
Present.
Hey, Joyce. Lori hey. Mitchell, are you also with her?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. Cynthia?
Present.
Walter, great. Bo Ortiz? Elena's on her way. Sheila? Sheila said she would be joining by phone, but we'll see. And then anyone from Secretary of State's office joining by phone? Vanessa or Vicky, I think, are the two that are left. I never
this is Vanessa. I'm here.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi.
If they're joining or not.
You, so. Hey, Vanessa, you can just come upstairs if you want to. You can join us in the room.
We're actually live and in person today, some of us anyway. Well, in person, let's put it that way. All right. So I had a few technical difficulties, but all of you should have received a spreadsheet this. The spreadsheet we're actually not going to go over today. It's what we've been going over at several meetings. I just wanted you to have the final version. Joan in my office is going to take a little bit more time. There's two tabs now. One is our comments. The comments were taken. We sent it out in email to everybody on the business practice group. We also sent it out to all clerks. We worked with the willing, unless you were on business practice, and then Joan probably pestered you to get you to give us your answers. We had asked for additional data after the December 9th meeting, and so there's a separate tab on there at the bottom that took the data type questions and put them all in one place so that we could see those better. The reason why I sent it out again is I will be sending this to the commission tomorrow at noon. And I wanted to give you one last opportunity, as it is officially until noon tomorrow, the draft version. And then at noon, it will become the version. So take one more look. Make sure that what you want in there is in there. And if you have comments, please send them by noon tomorrow so that, depending on how many comments we get out, we can get that out 2 or 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to the commission and actually give them, you know, a brief little bit of time to look at it before a meeting on Friday. Yes. So that's the purpose for that. The rest of the time for this meeting is from those conversations, from that data, is what do we want to make sure that gets included, or what are, so two tracks. One is what gets included in the report for the commission. And then the second part, so we'll take about 42 minutes on that. And then the next part we'll take is what are the practices that we as a group are going to focus on moving forward that are needed for 2014. Now, some of those items may overlap. We may want to make sure the commission is aware of some of these issues, and some of them may just be business practices that we want to finalize and align on. Questions, comments on the setup so far? Additions or anything missing? I do have one more item, and taking advantage of that Trevor and Amber are both here. Since we are really tied closely with the technical group, I would love if we could just do a quick update for this group so we're seeing how our pieces are fitting together. Both Amber and Trevor be to see your perspective. I'm totally putting you on the spot because that was never on the agenda, but now it is. And you know, also, for those who are interested, you can go back and listen. A meeting was held yesterday afternoon, I think, and it is on the Secretary of State's website. So you can go back and listen to the full meeting if you are so inclined. So, Trevor, you want to start, and then Amber, you want to fill in, okay, or add on, or?
Sure. Again, thanks, Hillary. So Trevor Timmons, Secretary of State's office. So the technical subgroup did meet yesterday. So prior to the meeting, I reviewed the recommendations report that the commission will submit on January 15th is supposed to consider the two prior reports as well as any learnings from the 2013 election. I'm pretty sure that's what it says in the statute. The two prior reports, the technical subgroup has not actually done any work on one of those reports, which was around voting systems. That's not a gap that I personally will be able to fill, but I think it's something that we probably need to bring to the commission's attention at their meeting Friday, if they want to, you know, what sort of feedback from the UVS process they may want to incorporate into the January 15th report. But in terms of the first report that the commission put together, I think we can contribute to that. Our discussion yesterday was largely driven by kind of the framework that Hillary and I agreed on, which is that business process changes around the actual management of BSPCs in 2013 and beyond really start with the business practice, and then technology kind of comes in at the end in terms of where technology may be needed to contribute to that. We talked about data exchanges, so we're talking both about the timeliness and the utility of NCOA, the timeliness and utility of death records, of felon records, and then timeliness around any other data exchanges that may occur. We talked about the RFP evaluation process that our office has currently underway around electronic poll books, and how that may be, how that evaluation, that RFP evaluation may turn out, and then some of the work that's underway in our office to put SCORE in a position to support electronic poll books, whether they're in-house or out-of-house, you know, third-party solutions. Either approach, we think the technology subgroup came to agreement, requires something more sophisticated than file transfers. I mean, web services is probably, you know, to use a pretty common technology term, that's probably the way in which VSPCs will be supported interacting with SCORE, because real-time information is critical to supporting VSPCs, and there's a complete agreement on that point. And then I think the last piece that we talked about was around security, right? I should say there's one other piece. Security is a component. We talked about acceptable use policies. We talked about guidance for counties around the last piece that I'll mention, which is really around locations for VSPCs. As has been mentioned in the past, maybe a third of the counties in the state have actually run vote center elections before. And that model, while a VSPC is not a vote center, I think there are some characteristics of vote centers that are pretty common to VSPCs. They have to be network connected. You have to plan how you're going to support that network connection. You need to have the appropriate levels of security around who's managing that network connection. And then all the human aspects, right? You need to think about people flow, you know, on election day, as well as during the rest of the VSPC open period. You need to be able to handle people that are walking in and need to register brand new. You need to be able to handle people that are walking in and want to change their address and then vote on the appropriate ballot style. And you need to be able to, if you can't verify somebody's eligibility right there, which we think is probably only going to happen when you can't, when you don't have a persistent network connection, you need to be able to figure out what ballot style is appropriate for that location when you hand them a provisional ballot, right? We're guessing that's going to be a rare circumstance. That's the whole purpose behind VSPCs. But we need to account for that. Kind of data exchanges, security, kind of locations planning. I mean, those are the key aspects that we're thinking about. And I don't think the consensus of our tech subgroup is that we're not going to write the how-to manual on those issues, but we're going to write the we need to know how to manual so we can identify those areas that really do need to be pretty well fleshed out, you know, for the 14 primary in general and beyond, because we don't have all those answers today. Is that, and I'm looking to Amber, and I know that Amber was present at the meeting yesterday, so she can correct me where I was wrong, and she can add things that I missed.
No, I think everything Trevor gave there, I mean, pretty much the discussion broke down into three major sort of four major categories. And as Trevor mentioned, you know, systems, which I think, you know, business practices and sort of figuring out what the business process and the model needs to be in terms of the voter experience, and then designing the system, whether it's an e-poll book or a web services app or whatever it is, to support that business process, because that doesn't, I don't think that we've done a very effective job of that in general prior to 1303 with the early voting module, what have you. So really analyzing what is the voter's experience, what is kind of the step 1, 2, 3 through the voting process, and then designing the system to meet that need. And then security, as Trevor mentioned, and then data interfaces, NCOA, CDOC, CDPHE, all of that, and then technical logistics. So we talked a lot yesterday, I think, about that there's probably a lot of best practices in amongst the counties in terms of how folks have been approaching the technical logistics for setting up a site, because this is really no different than early voting sites. We've had to be directly connected to SCORE for all of that. So how do counties prep for that? And what are some best practices around that? So we even talked about, you know, potentially a best practices guide, you know, like how do you identify the appropriate network connectivity? You know, what are your technical specifications for each site, technical kits, and sort of how that gets all rolled out, quality testing prior to the election to make sure that the network connectivity is still up, you know, freezes. I know in Denver, this whole city actually does an election freeze, so they don't do any network updates, maintenance, anything on any system that might impact the election. And sort of things like that, it sort of providing those kinds of best practices so that all counties can kind of utilize those best practices as they prepare. So those are kind of the four categories, as Trevor mentioned, that I think make sense for the technical subcommittee to sort of focus on.
Great. And I, again, this is Trevor. I've got one add-on. One thing that we talked about is, and I think it's, at least to my knowledge, it's an information gap that we have, but it heavily influences a couple of things. It influences the locations you look at for VSPCs, and it influences the systems that you look at to support VSPC activities, and that is how many people are going to show up, right? And you've heard me talk in the past about what we've seen, you know, centrally in terms of how many users are actually accessing SCORE, you know, prior to early voting start, during early voting, and then on election day, whether that's main office activity, mail ballot processing, you know, what used to be emergency registrations, as well as voting location activity, which is precinct-based polling locations using paper poll books, in a third of the counties using vote centers, and having a better idea of the number of, because I think that we can use the statutory formula to figure out how many locations, what the floor is in terms of the minimum number of locations, but we don't know how many individual stations and what the functions of those stations might be in a VSPC. How many actual users will be verifying eligibility, registering people brand new, making address changes, that sort of thing. And that is a big influencer on how we actually will be running elections. You know, you guys actually run that, and how we need to be prepared from the CDOS perspective to support you in running that.
Yeah. Let's take some questions. Connie?
Trevor, I had a question. Did, you know, we submitted an idea how many people we thought were going to be using it this last election. Did the numbers that were submitted to you jive with what actually you showed on your, or was it lower, higher?
So I'll confess, I haven't seen a compilation of that information. I think that Vicky's team was actually running a kind of a survey around 2013 activity, and then if you felt you were prepared to run estimates around 2014 activity. I think her team was kind of collecting those results, and I confess I haven't seen those yet. You know, we've got some great data, though. I mean, Amber shared with me the report that she presented to the commission at the last commission's meeting, and the difference between how many people showed up in person in 2011 and then how many people showed up in person in 2013, so which are, I think those are analogous kind of, you know, coordinated elections, and then kind of moving that forward and saying what it's going to look like in 2014 in a general election. I mean, there's a little bit of guesswork there, yeah. Right? But I think the fact that everyone's receiving a mail ballot, you know, is going to change behavior, right? And so what we're trying to do, I think, is figure out, well, how much is it going to change behavior, and what does that mean in terms of boots on the ground, how many people walk through the door? So I haven't seen the information yet, but I'm sure, you know, we'll get that.
Other questions from anyone on the phone or comments? Anybody else in the room? So then I have a couple questions. And I think some of those, I mean, those are like what you guys are talking about are like, here's the core issues. And then how with our group and your group, how do we go about addressing these issues? And, you know, one of the big ones is, you know, do we spend some time on what's our strategy to, we're going to have to predict how many people we're going to show up. People are going to be doing it in their counties. Some people are better at that than others. How do we capitalize on the brain trust that we have and help with that? That's one of the questions. I don't know. And then again, is that technical group? Yes. Business practice group? Probably too, to help with that. Have you guys, I mean, are you, I mean, that's probably round two of your meetings, but I'll start with just that one.
Perfect. And I'll go ahead and respond. So, the suggestion I made at the end of our meeting, mm-hmm. and there was not a general outcry against.
That's sometimes the measurement in these meetings.
By yeah, exactly. is to kind of focus on those, as Amber kind of outlined, these are the four areas that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. Vicky's team is, I believe they're taking a survey around, you know, potential number of users and, you know, because the information they gathered was prior to the coordinated election.
Yep.
So they're going to refresh that survey and say, well, okay, now that you've actually been through an election, would you revise that? Right. Yeah. So we can actually use that updated information.
Okay.
I don't know that the response rate that we've seen to those kinds of surveys maybe meets the level that we would hope for. And so I mentioned at the meeting yesterday, the County Clerks Conference is, I think, a prime opportunity to actually get in front of folks and try to validate some of that, even for those who maybe didn't respond to a web survey link.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Clerks Conference happens after the report is due, right? And
yeah.
So I think the report will identify, here's some data points that we need, mm-hmm. right, and we're seeking to gather. And then that will end up, so the report will say, you know, here's what the two prior reports recommended. Here's our progress in achieving those for the 2013 election. Here are open items we're still looking to for the 2014 election. And here's kind of the data collection and analysis that we're trying to do. And then how is the business practices group in terms of gathering business practices and the tech group in terms of designing systems and making them available to support those business practices? What do we see happening through 2014 leading to primary, leading to general?
I think so. We kind of moved into how that was my next half of my question is then also not also. So the first part, so it doesn't sound like we do we have a plan on how we're doing, how many people we think are going to show up, not how many users, but I mean, is that maybe that's something we look at for conference as well?
Yeah. I mean, I think users is key for the tool and the system piece, because that's what's going to drive the decision for the mm-hmm. Secretary of State's office to either use the existing Citrix-based solution in SCORE or to go to a web services app. Because, you know, so I think that's kind of a key decision point. Mm-hmm. So I think the users,
but isn't that based
and obviously
on how many
that's
people?
Based on kind yeah. of what you expect.
Like,
and I think every county is going to be different. And what's interesting, because I know while this was a low turnout election, Denver was just under 40% turnout, and I know there's other counties that were a lot higher than that. It still is a predictor of trending. Voters act the same from election to election. So as an example, for us, we actually, within about 1,000 ballots, predicted what we'd get on election day. based on previous elections and the fact that we have higher turnout in terms of stuff being dropped off on the last day.
When did you make that prediction? Was it at the very beginning you were correct?
The very beginning.
When you got to Friday?
At the very beginning.
When we get to Friday, knowing.
About a month prior to the election, we sit down and sort of project staffing for all of our ballot processing. And so, and the way we do that is we look back at all the various elections and we do an average of what came in on a given day. So we literally were almost, I mean, there were some days where we were within 200 ballots of what we received. So almost right down to the number that we got. And then we normally get about 40% of what we see in an election back on election day. So we got our 49,000. I think our prediction was about 47. So, I mean, we were literally almost right on the dot, and that's solely based on how voters have behaved in previous. So I think those trends are fairly key.
But so here, so you're, it sounded like your county performed as it usually does.
Yeah.
And you're about the only county that I've
Other
heard
counties are different,
where that's
right?
True. And so that's the part where, that I, obviously, that's the, so, and I know, actually, for those on the phone, and I don't know if you've read your agenda, but we are going to be going over resource allocation, and we've asked Amber to be part of, or not part of, be the presentation for that part to help us with some methodology on how do we look at those numbers and what do we compare. And I think that is the hard part, right? When you're, what you predict doesn't turn out as expected, even when, because, you know, we predict high, like, it's, oh, we think it'll be this, and then we add on.
And that's kind of like ours is always what's the highest that we expect. Mm-hmm. And so we usually shoot for more and we plan to that higher number because you want to plan for more rather than less.
Yeah,
so you always want to shoot high. We ended up on the high side of that projection for the 2013. So I think, you know, I think counties plan differently too, depending on, I mean, these types of projections are probably going to be the most useful for the larger volume, you know, counties. Mm-hmm. I mean, not every county is going to need to sit down and look back at every historic election and figure out exactly what, you know, they expect to get in. So I think it's probably, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe we can create some sort of template type tool that can aid with projections. I don't know.
At least get you to ask the right questions, right, to start looking at what the right data is. So,
And this is Sheila.
On the phone, go ahead. Can you talk a little louder,
I think
Sheila?
Also, what's that?
Is it because I'm in the room?
No.
Okay. Just talk loud till we figure out if it's you or the volume. Or
okay.
My head cold.
All right. Well, I just was going to add that I think that, that to Amber's point, I think that is achievable, but what will change for most counties is if they haven't been vote center or primarily mail ballot in the past, they may have more difficulty doing that projection because they don't have the data of how their voters have behaved in this instance where they get a mail ballot every election. I feel like Mesa County will be pretty good, but we did get more ballots in the last few days than normal. However, I do think we felt it a lot more because our counting method before was DRE. Mm-hmm. So it was uploading a chip rather than reading a paper ballot through a machine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part
of what we felt like we were just way busier. Yeah. But we actually processed the same number of voters. It was just a different voting method.
Yeah, which has got to be part of the planning of mm-hmm. what that looks like. You know, we've always done 99.9% paper, so that part pretty much felt the same, except that we had a much higher turnout on the last day and in the last afternoon than we've ever had before.
And it's all in Sheila, to your point, I mean, it's all in what your processing time is. So you have to, there's a time test element to how you're counting, how you're doing signature verification, how you're doing all those things. And the way that our tool is set up is it literally, you know, we can put in a quantity that we received, and it basically rolls through to all the rooms to see if there's going to be a backlog anywhere and if we need to put additional staff. So it's a whole kind of projection tool. You can select what turnout you expect it to be, and it will basically modify your staffing projections based on that projected amount that you want to do. So it's all in, you know, you can kind of put in those key things. How long does it take you to count? How long does it, you know, take to do this, this, and this, and then you put in your estimated projection, and then it kind of shows you what that is. Now, this is ballot processing staffing and projections. This isn't VSPC stuff.
Yeah.
No, but that's like the most important part because that's where all the action is.
Yeah, and then
so it sounds great.
I think we do need to talk about VSPCs because then you also, you know, then that kind of helps you determine how many stations you need to allocate for a particular site or what have you. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, and then right again the same sort of thing processing. Like if this is what you're predicting for this site, well. They're not all going to come, you know, evenly spaced out throughout the day, unfortunately. So that sounds like some great tools. And then, so I guess how do we, you know, what's next with that? Is it, and is that part of what we, you know, for our agenda here, what, you know, what do we work on? What do you guys work on? Have we, what's the next steps? How do we move this forward? And how do we, how does this group work with your group?
So, I mean,
if you've got that far.
So I think from the, like the score HQ perspective, having a good idea of how many, you know, election judges with fingers on keyboards in voter service and polling centers, is a critical knowledge gap that we have today. We need to have a better idea what that's going to be. You are not going to be able to, you know, build an estimate of that until you have some idea how many people you're going to have come in, right? And, of course, it's heavily tilted towards election day, right? How many of those people are just going to come in, but all they're going to do is drop off a mail ballot, right, versus those people that come in that are going to register or change their registration or want to vote in person, right?
Trevor and Hillary?
Yeah.
This is Cynthia in Larimer. And one of the things that we'd like to add to that, we agree completely with Sheila and Amber, but one of the things, too, that's going to drive this is what is on the ballot content, as well as if you have issues that are contentious throughout your early voting and election day period, you know, where people are waiting to turn their ballot in because they're not quite sure how to vote yet. So we just want to make sure that point is brought up as well.
It's a good thing with the factoring in the other elements, like your basic guess and then what will impact that as you move through the election, especially those polls, right? As people predict, is something going to be close? Is it not? And its impact on voting, too.
Well, this is Trevor. I mean, was 2013 considered to be a contentious election?
Each county was different.
Oh, yes, yeah, some areas.
That had issues, contentious issues. And then is it how big is the entity that has that issue?
Yeah, because, I mean, what I heard yesterday, which I hadn't heard to that degree, you know, up until yesterday, was I think Denver, El Paso, and Delta, and Jeffco all reported, boy, we had so many people on Election Day, whether they were dropping off mail, all the mail came in late, and we had many more people. You know, it was like a ghost town, you know, in a VSPC up until Election Day.
Yeah. And we have, I think, Sheila collected some data on that, too. That's really good that we'll make sure we include, as well as some of the data that was gathered. So the other piece that I wanted to add with, not only, so there's how many users we have, and as you were talking, one of the thoughts I had is, like, we have users in our office who on Election Day are on the phones. Well, currently, they're looking people up in SCORE. I mean, that's one of those where, you know, do you use the regular website for that? I mean, is that another? So how are we using those SCORE and what has to be done in SCORE and what doesn't? So maybe that's another distinction, especially, you know, in a small county, it's probably not going to make that difference. But we have at least 10 people on the phones, right, that are manning phones that are using SCORE to look up where does this voter need to go and do they have to use SCORE to do that?
Sure.
Or could you?
Well,
yeah,
and
is that another balance?
And in terms of mail ballot receiving, if many more ballots are coming in very late in the day, will you have more people back office at headquarters actually doing mail ballot receiving so you can acknowledge receipt and then count those votes so you can produce results, you know, at the time that the networks have come accustomed to getting them, right?
Yeah.
Because that may change how many users you have in your county office that aren't helping at a VSPC but are just doing mail ballot handling.
Yeah, mail ballot is definitely another. And then,
but I don't know if that's any different. I mean, I don't know if the capacity you have today to do that, you know, is sufficient or was sufficient, you know, this year based on everything coming in very late in the day.
Well, and then counties that are using the sorters, you won't have people directly with score, but you'll have those big, you know, have those uploads and downloads and how at certain times, right? So it's not, you won't have, may not have 20 users because they'll be working up within the module of the mail ballot sorter. Mm-hmm. So it's all those, how those elements. So just to make sure that we, it's not just how many people do you think are going to be in BSBCs, it's how many and how are they using it.
Right, right.
Okay. Anything else on that that this group should be aware of or, you know, interacting with you guys on? I mean, I know we will be, but.
Hillary?
Yeah.
One item I know that we had discussed sometime in the past, and I know Sheila was also one of these that was questioning how many DSPCs we would really need in some of these sites, especially odd year elections and whatever. I know that won't affect that probably next year, but that'd be one thing I would want to make sure that the commission would know, is I think that we need to relook at that, and then of course that would affect it in odd years as far as those numbers of people needing to use the score or whatever they decide.
And I have that as an item as well. It's like what are the metrics what do we need to look at to measure to make those types of decisions? And that's one of the charges of the commission as well, is what are the metrics that we want to put in place for 2014, so as we move into the election, people know these are the numbers, this is the data we're looking for ahead of time, as opposed to in the middle or at the end going back and trying to collect it. So hopefully we can create processes that make that as easy as possible for all sites, mm-hmm. of counties with all levels of data support in those counties. So, and I have that as one of our items for this group to talk about too, both on that. So, all right. So any other questions or comments on this part with the technical committee? Not sure what we call everything these days. So, okay. So then the next part is what are the areas that we want to, and at this point, I don't know if it matters if we think the commission should be focusing on it or we should be focusing on it. I think we can sort out where those go. Like, does it go in the report or not? Really, we just need to know what needs to be on our radar as we try to make sure that we have the best implementation for this new election model possible. And we'll worry about, you know, oh, that goes there, or this goes in this bucket after we get them on the table. And I was going to start with some of the conclusions from from Amber's presentation on the 9th. I think others had some of these items too, and then continued to add on to those. So, and I don't know if you have that handy, Amber, and you want to do it. I actually have it typed in here. I'm happy to let you cover it, but I'm also happy to say what I captured, and you can add on. So I just also wanted to give you credit that this is where I thought, you know, I always prefer to not start with the blank page. So the first one we touched on a little bit too here is the streamlining the module in SCORE for the voter service centers and making that as efficient as possible. I think there's some technology decision points that need to be made there, you know, and that it has to be live. I mean, I think, do you guys have anything to add to that one?
No, that gets to the core question, I think, of whether an electronic poll book is the only way to support that in 2014 and beyond, or can we look at just changing SCORE, beefing up Citrix infrastructure, you know, and is that sufficient for 2014 based on, you know, how people are voting today?
Okay.
Yeah, and I think for resource allocation, that's key, because if it's, you know, and I know we've sent in some suggestions for how we could modify things in the early voting module, but modifications that make the time to process a voter, you know, a minute to 2 minutes is better than 5 minutes. So I think it totally depends on what the tool is going to look like, and maybe it would be great for some sort of working session to, maybe for the business practices group, to make some recommendations maybe to Vicki and her team, or at least have a discussion about changes that could be made or clicks that could be removed to just garner that feedback. Because I don't think that we've really had that discussion in a long time. So maybe that's even, because that kind of builds into, if the decision goes to a web services app, some requirement gathering would already be part of that in terms of what would mesh with the business practice. So I think some sort of working session like that would be key, really, for either path, for fixing the early voting module or for a web services app. Yeah. So something like that, I think, would be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. It's the scaling of those extra 10 seconds here and there. But it's frightening sometimes, the numbers that they end up being. Anyone on the phone with other, the score and the score module, especially related to the voter service and polling center? While we're on score, what about score related to mail ballot processing? Go ahead. I heard someone click on.
Oh, yeah, I just unmuted myself. This is Sheila. I think that the mail ballot module is pretty strong in score. Seems to be really working well.
Okay. Anyone else on that? I think I'd be pretty satisfied with how that interface works, even with, we're a sorter. Then the uploading and downloading is pretty efficient, pretty effective. Cynthia, what about you? I know you guys use the sorter as well. I think there's some post-processing, but that, again, isn't, in my mind, it's not urgent for 2014. Like signature, how you update signatures, that kind of stuff. But,
we don't see any issues. We think that the score module works fine for that.
Okay. Great. And then, I'm counting registration as part of the VSPC for that portion. What about outside of that time period? Just registration, not the online part, but just processing in office. We'll go to online in just a second, because I think that's another item to look at. Any comments? I don't remember anything really from the spreadsheet from it. I just wanted to give us one last opportunity to be a little methodical, kind of popping through the areas, because the VSPC is such the obvious area that we want to make sure we touch on the other ones. Okay. Then the next item is looking at the online, and a lot of it was around messaging, and then I think we're also talking some policy on, do you keep processing them from online and those kind of things. So, and Amber, you want to add on, as this was, I think you have some experience with that. And again, it's some of this may be larger county issues.
Yeah, I think in looking at everything in 2013 and even going back to 12, looking at sort of the volume we dealt with, and we had about 74% of our in-person voting happen on election day in the 2013, and most of them, or a good chunk of them, had either updated their address or had registered to vote online prior to coming into the service center. And so in looking at it, I would prefer that it would work better from a process perspective if we just kept updating all the way up until, even the day before the election, because then all of those are done. So if the person shows up on election day or even the day before, it's already been updated in the system, and then they don't have to fill out a form, and you don't have to spend time updating their information while they're standing in front of you, because really you just end up handing them a form, they fill out the same information again, and then you have two registrations that have happened. So from a process perspective, I think it would be good to just keep processing all the way through. Now, I think that's, that's a resource allocation type situation. But I think in the grand scheme of things, when you say, is it easier to process that registration from OLVR or to have them fill out a paper form standing there in front of you and then have to key it all in? And I would prefer, again, for it to come from OLVR or from Motor V or what have you. So keep making changes farther than we did all the way up till election day, because then it makes that voter experience go much quicker on election day, and it's easier to process.
And less confusion for the voter.
Yeah. They registered on OLVR, then they're not confused or they don't understand why it didn't, go through. It's a better kind of experience for them, and it's easier because you're just, you live at this is your correct address, issue paper or DRE, and they're good to go, and there's not extra forms involved. So I think it would make sense to keep going, and I know that's a change. But
Amber?
I think it'd be a, yeah.
This is Cynthia. One of the things, understand exactly what you're saying there, but one of the things we want to point out, too, is remember that when we're doing that address change and we're doing those Olivers, we're also still generating a ballot, and we're not printing those. So we'll have to figure out something in SCORE or a methodology or a business practice for dealing with those ballots that are generated and sitting out there.
Yeah, that was one of the recommendations we had, and I think this is why it would be key for, like, Vicki and Trent and kind of to have a discussion with this group is really turning off. So if we can't mail ballots after 8 days, there's no reason for the system to continue to generate ballots automatically. So it'd almost be better to just turn that functionality, you know, cut that off at 8 days or whenever it is to, you know, stop mailing ballots so that then the system wouldn't automatically do that, so you don't have that surrender piece. You just issue DRE, issue paper if they're standing in front of you. So it wouldn't automatically do that within that 8-day window. Do you think that would be, that was the way I thought about it. I don't know what your thoughts are, Cynthia.
You know, I'm just, knowing how SCORE is coded and the you know, how it's so complicated with the programming, I think it'd be something we definitely need to test, you know, and I think it'd have to be based on transaction source and things like that, perhaps. But, you know, that was just one of our concerns, you know, is, you know, you know, your cleanup afterwards as well, so.
I think that the stopping for the automatic issuance at the 8 days is a good idea, because we could still manually issue one in the mail ballot module if that's what we were doing. If it's
somebody
coded right,
to take something. Yeah. I think that a feasibility of that is something that we should look at sooner than later. So Elena had something too.
I just had a question. Mm-hmm. So Amber, in practice, the deadline for online would still be 8 days. So a voter would be guaranteed if they filled it out before the 8-day deadline that their registration would be processed, but it would be permissive after that. So the voter wouldn't be guaranteed if they registered the night before that they would have their registration fully processed, but the counties could do that to then alleviate the burden the voter service and polling center. Is that right? Like, kind of how it works? Because we wouldn't be guaranteeing that there'd be no registration deadline, because that would be more complicated.
I think it would make sense to do that, because I think in particular in the big counties where there's going to see sort of this higher volume of people coming in, keeping processing, we're eliminating that time of the in-person interaction in front of the voter. So I think and it's the same thing. The registration's either going to be processed through OVR or it's going to be done in person, one of the two. Mm-hmm. We're just really saving. We're cutting out time
right.
the person standing.
But really it's changing the practice more so than the deadline in terms of how it would be communicated to voters or it'd be in statute. I mean, there might be a statutory change associated, but it wouldn't be a... Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
To
look at.
This is Vicki.
Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I just wanted to, you know, say something here before y'all get to
too
going
excited.
Too far down that road about turning off mail ballot. There is no mail ballot module, period. The mail ballot issue one-off is done in voter registration, and you can't turn that off. And another reason that I want you just to think before, you know, you send requirements like that, just because you can't mail them after a certain time, you still need to be able to issue mail ballots to be faxed or emailed, and you still have to issue mail ballots even up to 8 days after the election if you have to create an online, an address locator, a FWAB issuance to duplicate onto.
Agreed.
So,
yeah, Vicki, I think just the suggestion was not turning it off altogether, but the automatic. What's happening now is the automatic update. So, if there's an address change or what have you, it automatically issues a mail. And what would be ideal is maybe even in the active ballot screen, that could become the in person. So then, instead of it just automatically, you would have, you know, options within there that says issue mail, issue in-person paper, or issue DRE. That would be the ideal scenario, so they're all right there. Whereas now you have to go in, someone's standing there in front of you. They don't want a mail ballot. You have to go in. You have to surrender the mail ballot in one screen. Then you have to go over, issue the paper DRE in the other, and it's sort of clunk. It just takes time. So I think to
totally understand. And
that's what these are the kind of suggestion is. That's all it is.
No, but these are the kind of things when you're talking about them, like right now, put them in writing. Send them to me. Because this is the kind of thing I want to capture right now for new development, because this is the kind of thing that we need in the new development so that you don't have to do that type of thing. But
And Vicki, we've been putting together a document to send your way, but I think I think it would be good for this group maybe to have some sort of discussion, like a working session on maybe some requirements with, in combination with Vicki, Trent, kind of the SCORE team, so that it's easier for them to kind of capture what is needed that can mesh with the process in the field and make sure that the tool supports, you know, what actually occurs in the field. I think that'd be great. So if that's helpful for you, Vicki.
It's extremely helpful, very, very helpful, because we definitely want to mesh with business process. When we're able to do, you know, do the requirement, the more in-depth business process type requirements, that's what we need to know. And you're the ones who tell us. So.
And Vicki would. So my thought is to get that scheduled in maybe the second week of January.
No, Trent won't be here.
Okay, so my thought, well, the third, this is where we always run into our challenge. Well, that would make it the last week of January, because we have clerk's conference the next week, but maybe we can.
Yeah, so.
Is that too late? I'm pulling the calendar.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. The development that you're talking about right now is too big to do in SCORE. Meaning, we wouldn't, this is a new development talk, I hope. Not let's start, you know, doing a lot of development in SCORE that's going to be completely unnecessary once the new development is in place.
So I guess
I think
that's
one of the things we would like.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's one of the things we'd like to understand is what is the new development look like?
Oh, well, we don't know what it looks like.
Okay.
Trevor's there. Is Trevor still there?
I feel, so it's funny, so maybe we need to do, maybe we do try to get together sooner than later then on that. Like maybe that first week, the sixth week of the sixth, no?
No, so we're not going to have enough information. One of the big things that's sort of the hurdle that's limiting all of this is we need to nail down the e-poll book. Once you nail down the e-poll book, everything feeds off of that. And so I think I look at Trevor, but I'm thinking that's middle of January.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with how do VSPCs have to operate, right? Because that's different than how we've done things in the past, right? Mail ballot processing, making efficiency improvements to mail ballot processing to make that work more smoothly. Mail ballot processing, pretty much works today, right? And if that works well, but we can't handle VSPCs well, we need to look at that first, VSPCs. And then we look at how can we make it better to do registration around mail ballots, around mail ballot issuance, saying don't automatically generate a ballot style change. But I mean, to me, I think that's less important than making sure we can handle same day registration and registration changes in a VSPC.
So just to be clear, this is a VSPC issue as well, because at least how things currently work. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sure. And I think we understand that. Yeah, okay. It's just,
get your point.
Yeah. The first thing we have to do is to make sure that we can register somebody and update their registration. Those are the two things that we want to make the e-poll book be able to do, while at the same time being able to do what an e-poll book is supposed to do. And we're going to get some system. It's going to be a square thing or a round thing, and we're going to have to shove it into the round or square hole that already exists. and we're going to have to code it so that it works with SCORE and tie it in. And so a lot of our development team will be all of February, all of March, all of April are going to be trying to make that thing that we're going to get in the e-pull book process fit in the SCORE world. And that's going to be the primary number one issue for the spring.
So a very basic question. When Vicki references new development, sorry, this is Elena. When Vicki was referencing new development, that was referring to the e-pull book decision and the implementation there. That's the new development. Is that right? Whatever that is, whether it's an e-poll book or whatever.
That's like our spring.
That
yeah.
thing.
And,
right.
Yeah.
And that's sorry, it was very basic. I just want to make sure I was following.
And so essentially, instead of calling it e-poll book, let's call it VSPC.
Right.
The VSPC solution, whatever that is.
So real-time, network-connected, affecting the official state repository of voters, and knowing which ballot should be issued, capturing credit for voting so they wouldn't be issued another one, or if they walked into a VSPC after they dropped off their mail ballot, but it hadn't been received yet,
right.
You'd give them a real ballot, and then when the mail, you'd give them a real ballot, they would vote that, and then the mail ballot, you'd say, oh, this person already voted. I mean, that sort of thing.
So the only clarification, I guess, for Trevor, yesterday it seemed like there were still potentially two tracks. But it sounds like
there's... Oh, no, that's very true. That's very true. Very possibly two tracks.
So there's possibly just in SCORE what we've got now with more Citrix licenses or a web services app, right? So it seems to me that then some sort of working group to talk about here's what in an ideal world, here's what the counties, the end users would want to see out of a module, functionality requirements, whatever, because that helps both tracks, correct? Mm-hmm. So we'd want to do that sooner rather than later, it's regardless good. Of a decision on
which direction. Because it seems like, so it may still end up being a round hole and there still may be some shoving, but if we can shape the size of, you know, if we see, I guess I'm having a disconnect of, it does feel a little chicken egg, but it does also feel like, we've always kind of like, well, here's the technology. Okay, now we fit our practice to it. And it sounds like I might not be understanding, but it sounds like we're kind of headed in that same direction. Because I don't feel we've had that really in-depth, okay, nitty-gritty.
Well, practically speaking, in the middle of January, we're going to know whether we're taking track A or track B. We're almost certainly going to know that.
Okay.
And if we don't know it, we've got issues.
Okay.
So we're gonna know either track A or track B. And at that point, it'll make a lot of sense to have that conversation because we'll know how we can fit these design changes into either the new world VSPC creation or the old world early voting creation.
And what's just to be remedial, but what's driving decision A or B is users. Number of users.
No.
What is
okay? So then
it's not business practice.
But it's not practice. So I mean, users is part of it.
Right.
But so what's driving that decision?
Financial.
Again, this is Trevor. So users is driving some of that.
Yeah.
Plan B, let's beef up Citrix. If the number of users is 3,000, probably very expensive, right? And using an 8-year-old code base that, you know, at some point we're probably going to have to redo anyway, right? That's plan B. So, users is absolutely a component. Cost is also a component. As we looked at electronic poll books, and we do have a couple of county members on the evaluation team that are looking at the RFPs, Rudy Santos.
The one who's on the phone.
Yeah, and Liz Olson from El Paso are part of that evaluation team. Rick Matsumoto from OIT, who's also a member of the commission, is on the evaluation team. Some of the electronic poll books, all they require is a web browser. All you need to do is have a computer that has a web browser. It doesn't even have to be a desktop. It could be a laptop. It could be a mobile device. All you need is a web browser. Some of them, you got to have this kind of mobile device, right? We're not going to buy those. But if it's a dedicated mobile device you have to use, if it's not just bring a browser, there are costs associated with that, right? So cost is a component. I think how many users we need to support is a component. Baseline, you know, got to be real time. Got to be real time.
So I feel like, this is Vicki again, I feel like I kind of set the cat among the pigeons and I should know when to keep myself muted.
No, we always appreciate it, Vicki. It helps. Well, it adds to a deeper conversation. I mean,
well, yeah, and my concern was like, you know, when SCORE is so tightly wound that the base architecture, which is mail ballot, absentee ballots, let's put it that way, for mail ballots in SCORE is such baseline architecture that when you start messing with that, you can, you know, have a lot of issues. So all I wanted to let you all know before I mute myself now is the last week of January, it's absolutely, Trent has to be at a meeting that we would all have, okay. Has to be. And so that would be because of he's not back until the week that y'all are in clerk's conference. And so if Trevor approves, we could do it the, because I can't speak for IT, then we could, you know, have a meeting the last week of January and kind of sit down, and we'd have a better idea, I believe, as Trevor said, and Judd, at that point of time. Then if we did need to look at doing some type of more major development in SCORE, which I'm hoping not so much, then we would know more then. And it would be a much better conversation, I think, and requirements gathering. Y'all would know what direction to go in with us.
Gotcha.
That sounded weird.
Well, yeah, that was really helpful, actually. I know you felt like you, whatever your analogy was, which all I saw was flying birds in my image that you gave. I do think that was helpful to understand how that might be. We amongst us business practice groups still may want to meet and talk through the processes, again, separate of technology before then, so that when we get to that meeting, we're geared up and ready to go and we're not having that conversation for the first time with you all. I think that would be of benefit and use at a minimum.
Absolutely, Hillary. I think that would be great. I mean, yeah.
So I'm working on getting some of those scheduled.
Can I go back to a topic from about a half an hour ago?
Sure.
I missed my window to comment, and we went off in a different direction.
I looked your direction, just to be fair.
It was a I blame Vicki, but the conversation was about the 8-day window for use of all VR. So is the, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but is the proposal to allow for OLVR use for new registrations within the 8 days, or are we only talking about updates? And to what degree is that difference important, I guess? Because that would be a pretty significant statutory change.
Statutory policy.
For sure, updates.
I think it'd be nice to do all, but that's my personal. And I totally.
They're going to have to show all that information to vote in person anyway.
My sole reason for it is to basically get in front of us having to do it with them standing in front of us on election day. Because ultimately, if they go fill it out online, they're not going to get a mail ballot. So they're going to come in person. And so the sole reason from my perspective is, it's much easier to process the voter, and we can do it faster if we've already dealt with the registration. And it's easier to pull it over. It's, you know, less time consuming if you process an OLVR registration than if you process it off a paper form with them in front of you. So that's my, from Denver's perspective. I don't know what everybody else thinks on the phone.
Let's hear from everybody. I would love your opinions on this. I know this is a full participatory call. So I'll just do them in the order I can think of you guys. Sheila, what's your thoughts on that?
I would like to continue to be able to process, just for what Amber said, the decrease in the amount of time that it takes for an in-person transaction at one of the voter service and polling centers. If it could be pre-filled and they're going to show up to get a ballot because they didn't get their mail ballot, that would just be an efficiency that we could gain if we had time to make the entry.
Updates and new?
Yep, both, I would think. Makes sense under our current
Okay. Current situation.
Okay. Rudy?
It would be easier to keep on processing paper and online voter registrations as well. I agree.
Cynthia?
I agree that it would be easier and getting those processed. My concern is how the voter is going to know. Are they going to have an expectation that they're getting a ballot somehow? So we'd want to make sure our messaging is very clear to them. And I'm just, you know, the other process I'm thinking about is our judges, but I think I can get through that with our judges. You know, they're in there, they're found, just get them a ballot. So my biggest concern is the voters. What are they expecting? Are they expecting a ballot through the mail, or do they know that they're going to have to go to a VSPC?
Okay. I think that's an issue either way, but and very important. Thanks. Renee, did you join us?
I am.
I think I forgot
here.
To call you earlier.
Yeah,
sorry.
The subject changed quickly. I agree with Cynthia. Another concern I would have is upon registering a voter in SCORE, it's going to automatically prepare a ballot for them. So that's going to be an issue as well.
Yeah, and that's we have been talking about that as well. So
okay,
great.
All righty then.
Definitely
so
needs to stay on the
concern.
Table. Yeah. Joyce and okay. Lori. Oh, sorry, Renee. Did you have anything else?
No, that okay. was it. Thanks.
Joyce and Lori?
Well, I think that everybody has brought up all the issues that we had, and I agree with all of them, and I think that Sheila's brought up some good points, too, so we agree.
Okay. Fran, were you able to join us? Okay. I think that's all I have on the phone, but I'm having memory gaps, so I'll blame my
This is Bo.
Oh, you joined us. Yay. All right.
Sorry, I was a little bit late.
No problem. I don't feel bad that I didn't remember you were on the call. Go ahead.
No, I like the idea. I think it makes more sense than what we're doing now to keep OLVR running. So I would agree.
Okay. Connie?
Yes, I thought it should have been that way to begin with. I'm very pleased with this. I think it'll be a much better business practice as long as we have some messaging and stuff and we'll just have to work on communication with our voters.
Okay.
Hillary?
Yeah.
It's Cynthia again.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we would like to bring up for a point is one of the things we're going to have to really consider after this election is the residency issue with our school districts and our municipalities and all of that and getting people registered. So not just for OLVR,
yep.
but we just want to bring that up too.
It's on the list, and we're working our way down it. So. I'd rather have it on twice than not at all. So thanks.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. So that was SCORE and OLVR. Any other things related to one of those two topics? I'll go ahead and, from our comments, do a draft of what we'd write up around these issues, and then we can decide that this will be done through email of, you know, what do we move forward. I mean, in my mind, our final recommendations for the commission, I'm looking at, you know, getting things, I guess the 6th and then the final would be the 13th since it's due on the 15th, if there's anything that we want included. And again, so we'll sort of sift that out, whether these end up in the actual recommendations to the commission or not, these are definitely items that we need to keep our eye on and keep moving forward with on all of these that we're continuing with. So. Then next up,
Can I ask a question
yeah.
based on it? What was the original basis for setting up the 8 days?
Setting up
the 8-day window of time in which OLVR would be not used. What was the thinking?
Initially, it was because we wouldn't be mailing them a ballot, and they would be going to a center anyway mm-hmm. to get their ballot. So just make sure you took care of everything there. What wasn't thought through was the efficiency of having them already registered when they got to the center.
Okay.
That was it.
There's, Cynthia already mentioned it, but I think that there would be a concern with making sure that voters understood that.
Yeah.
But.
And we have a different similar issue now, which is those who think they are already registered
Anyway, I mean, there's still some messaging issues either way.
Yeah, we had a lot of people coming in thinking they were already done through.
Because they did it through.
And then they were like, well, I have to fill out another form because they were deferred after 8 days. And so I think that messaging piece is key. And it, to me, it's less confusing for the voter just to keep going.
Well,
because they think they're registered.
The irony of that is that the messaging on OLVR during that 8 days is very dramatic. It's all over the place. It's in big, bold letters. And it says, this is not applicable for this election. Under no circumstances, you must go in person. Please don't do this if you are doing it for this election. And it doesn't make any difference. Yeah. Well, so the messaging part is sort of difficult under all circumstances.
Right, and I think that the key message needs to be you need to go to the voter service and polling center, but if the voter does fill out the form, hopefully that then streamlines the process once they get there. But
yeah.
I agree, if there's one message a voter gets, it should be you need to go in person. Don't sit by your mailbox hoping something will show up, because it will not.
It should have been at the end also, beginning and the end. That's what we had heard from our constituents. Okay, yeah, I didn't see it at the beginning, but then why didn't you remind me at the end of this? I know.
You're still not registered.
45 seconds later.
I know. And there is that kind of futility in the, like those who will read, and those who will not, we'll still be having a different conversation with them.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what else to say about that. We'll just leave it and move on to the next area. So, Cynthia, we'll go ahead and you know, with residency, I know that there is legislative work being done with the Special District Association and CML. So until we see what that is, I think that spending a lot of time on it and coming up with solutions as the law currently is may not be our best time spent. But other than if that, we'll have a pretty early indication of how that will go, although we've heard promising things, and there still may be, once we see what that is, what's the practice around it, even after it's written, of course. So,
right, and we just want to make sure that that is addressed with our business processes, however we change this, that we're looking at that as a process, okay?
Absolutely, we'll keep it on the radar, and we will need to look at it. Anyway, hopefully what we look at will be pretty simple, but we'll just, again, keep an eye on. Let's see how that gets sorted out across or up the street first.
Thank you.
Great. Let me just, sorry, my multiple screens are failing me at the moment, so give me 1 second here. The next is the expanded use of the 24-hour drop-off boxes. And I think the conversation that had been brewing and percolating both with the commission and we talked a little bit amongst ourselves, and again, this might be more of a larger county issue, is they were really popular. I mean, we had some pretty big numbers for people using them, and the requirement to have video I don't know if it's actually video, I guess it's a little antiquated, to have it camered, let's put it that way, prohibits the expansion of that. So I don't know if as a group we have an opinion. I mean, that's a pretty big policy.
Mm-hmm. My opinion implication. Is if you can do
it. I hadn't heard that before, but I didn't think it was that prohibiting. Like, what kind of locations are they thinking? Have you heard?
And maybe it's how some counties are doing it. So maybe it's more of a best practice. I know some counties have been quite fortunate and are able to make use of current cameras. I wanted to put it on, and I know Amber, it was one of the topics. Again, I said I cheated. I started with Amber's issue list and then added on to them. This is one of those that, from the data that we saw and the number of people using them, you know, counties who can put these in, it really does seem to be serving the voters, and they like them. So Amber, you want to add on to?
Yeah, I mean, we had almost 50,000 ballots dropped off in our 13 24-hour boxes. So we're actually adding 7 more for next year. And I know for us, we've just been building in the requirements for surveillance and things like that. But I've heard from other counties that that can be a reason not to add a box if there's that expense and sort of the surveillance piece. So I'm not sure if that might be why it was on the list. But for us, I mean, we're adding boxes because that's kind of what the voters are driving us to do. So I don't know if others have a concern on the cost but I'm thinking that the video surveillance part is the part that does cost a significant amount of money, and then to store the video and all of that going forward is tough. So
is that a statutory requirement, or is that in rule, or both? Like, where does that come from?
I think it's in rule.
And I didn't really look at what it was before I put it on the list, just so you know.
Is that how to maintain it? I mean, like surveillance, is that what you meant? Because yeah. It's not required.
That's in rule. The video.
The video part, yeah. But it's not required that we have to have them.
But if you do have them, they have to be.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Just making sure I understood.
Yeah. Okay. So is that something this group wants to go that deep on, or just more that recommending some best practices around them and the use? Because I have to say, I was debating whether I was going to do it, and after hearing the number of people, we'll definitely be looking at putting some of those in. And it's figuring out how to do the surveillance piece with it. So, and maybe, Sheila, it sounds like, did you go to places? I guess I asked some of the counties, because did you guys add, you know, was it a unit that had that already attached to it? Did you go to places that already had cameras available?
Yeah, we're either at municipal or city or county buildings, so we're probably pretty lucky, actually, as I listen to the conversation. That's probably not normal in most jurisdictions.
And you guys already keep those tapes, and all that process is already part of your infrastructure? Okay.
We hadn't been keeping the tapes, but yeah, we just changed the backup procedure for some of the locations for those that duration of time.
Others who used them? Well, maybe we do to reach out to some of the other counties too. Anybody else on the phone use the 24 hours? And I would be really be helpful to hear what your implementation strategy was.
You know, I guess really, if you think about the risk mitigation that the camera provides, all it really provides is who did it, hopefully. And so I'm just thinking about the disaster recovery procedure for a clerk and recorder. If a 24-hour box was somehow ran over or stolen or whatever,
fire.
Or set on fire.
Or, you know, like a post office box that they drop a firecracker in.
Right. So the process would still be the same, and that is notifying your community. Anybody who dropped your ballot in this box on this date, check to see if it's been received by the Elections Division, and if not, we will reissue you a replacement.
Well, and that was some of the conversation, and I guess the difference is like this is a concentrated box of ballots versus a regular post office ballot box that are all over the place and people drop ballots in. So
I think the other thing that was brought up is, and I know with the post office box, it's a felony to mess with it. So potentially putting some sort of, you know, something in the law that basically, you know, provides for a penalty for tampering with that sort of equipment, maybe. I don't know.
That's another way to look at it. Okay.
And Hillary, you know, perhaps it should. A size also may make a difference too, you know, because I know there's a lot of the smaller counties that have no intention of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because financially, where?
Sense,
I mean,
yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. So I just say if we do something like that, we have best practices built around what if you do have the 24/7 or wherever you have it. But at this point in time, I would sure hate to be this group that would be addressing something like that, because I think it would be quite unpopular.
You mean making the recommendation that you should have one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't see us going there. It was more what should you be considering, and how do you make it most cost effective? And basically, it's learning from others' experience. And at this point, yeah, I don't know,
do you think,
building in as it is.
Does it make sense to maybe for this group look at the rule and have a discussion with the state on whether or not we can make the rule more flexible, perhaps, to not make it prohibitive for counties to put in, you know, the 24-hour box type. Because I think that sounds like that might be what the issue is. There's a lot
we're
of
having an audio
steering away from it because it may be cost prohibitive.
Hold on. Sorry, someone was saying something about an audio. Are you not hearing us okay?
Maybe is there somebody in their car or in the wind on this?
Oh, on the yeah, phone? We're not hearing that at all. But that I don't know what that means. I look to Steve.
Wind. It stopped.
Okay,
it
stopped. So apparently someone was. Thank you.
Not
muting. Now they're muted. Okay. And maybe that's something at conference we talk with counties and see, is that really an issue or is that a perceived issue? And if it is, you know, maybe it's the penalty, maybe it's not. How does that everybody?
Right.
I think anyway, at any route, let's learn from what worked and what didn't, and how some people are implementing that.
I really like Amber's suggestion about, you know, more severe penalties in case you do mess with it.
I mean, that seems like it's needed regardless of the surveillance question, but then to the surveillance piece, it would be interesting to know, was that a barrier for counties, or were there counties that were able to come up with creative solutions and just have more information? Because it may be that it's
right.
Some counties come up with solutions that others could use, or there may be a larger problem to address and figure out whether or not.
Well, and if surveillance is part of it, it's always going to be a part of it.
Right.
I mean, because it limits where you can put
them.
Cost effectively. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I don't even know where I stand on it myself. It's
right.
One of those, like,
so that's part, like,
it's part of the conversation.
Then,
well, because, I mean, I get both sides of it, right? I get why you want to have people look at it. So.
Right.
I think Sheila.
Did you guys hear Lori start to chime in?
No, I'm sorry. Lori, go ahead.
So the surveillance part is a very difficult part for us. And this last election, for the first time, we had an outside drop-off box in front of our courthouse, which wasn't under surveillance, but we just had it open 8 to 5, and then throughout the day our two judges would go out there and empty it. And from the beginning it was very, very successful, and even on election day there was probably 250 ballots in there, and every day there was at least 50, and it was the talk of the town. People really enjoyed it. We wish we had a place, but it's very limiting on where we can put one for 24-hour. We wish we had one, though.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I think there's more conversation to have based on.
It'd be interesting just to learn more, because it feels like there's stuff out there. I just don't have a clear sense of what it is.
So we're going to have a conference. There'll be a review section going through a lot of the issues, and we'll make sure that this is one of them that we talk about with the group. So, all right.
This is Bo, and I am in my car. I'm sorry.
I figured it was you, Bo. I wasn't going to call you out, though.
I'm driving my daughter to gymnastics right now, but the question I have for the counties that did use the 24-hour box, did you see any marked increase in having the cure signatures where people left the signature off of the envelope?
I believe there'd probably be only one county that may have measured that. Amber? And we love you for it. I'm just kidding. Others may. I didn't mean to insult anyone else, but
I think we didn't see any difference.
But it's a good question, because I know our drive-by people, they rip it off and they say, "Oh, you know, they check to make sure it's signed." So I meant that
this
as a compliment.
Lori and
JP,
we had right at the end, the very last minute, when we couldn't really do anything about it, there was, I think, 3 ballots dropped in there with no secrecy sleeve, nothing, just the ballot.
Yeah, we get those too.
We do too.
Like, sad.
Yeah, it is.
But up until then, everybody was. It was really great.
That's great. Anyone else with their drop off? Another item we have, and I'm not sure with this group how much it's the continue to enhance the training program. That's always one of the focuses, and I think there's so much to be said on that one. There's really nothing to say about it right now. And then another is obviously looking at the continuing to analyze our processes to identify the efficiencies. And with that, one of the ones that popped out from our reviews and different conversations, and then also adds on to if we continue to process registrations all the way through the election with Oliver and all, is
is that process of how to handle people who are already properly registered versus those who are coming in for a new registration or an address change. I know in my county, like this, what we have them fill out to vote in person is so close to what you would put on a registration form anyway, as far as, you know, not having to, like, have, you know, some, and in my county, I don't know about yours, but sometimes they don't remember if they're properly registered at their actual address or not. So I would love to hear from some of the counties who did, like, how you handled voters who were all, who thought they were already properly registered. What did you guys do with them? Meaning, like, used a signature, I mean, because I don't know if anybody actually used a signature card that you mailed ahead of time. But did you, when they came in, did they get a different form? Like, I think some counties said, oh, I gave them, they had the blue card. Sheila, or I don't remember what color, but I know Sheila was one of those. Fran, Denver, Sheila, would you mind starting? How did you handle them different?
What do you mean the blue card?
Well, I know this is where, like, my sketchy vague details from the training manual is not helpful. Uh-oh. So it may not be an actual blue card. My understanding was that there was a separate, shorter-looking card for those
if they
who
were
already
registered.
And what did you require on that card? Because and just to help, because from an efficiency standpoint, I mean, and then I was actually
It was better not to have them fill out a whole long, huge form again if they're already properly registered. So they were initially screened to see if they were registered, and some of this was combined in, you know, like, one desk.
If you weren't busy,
Didn't have to be, like, five desks. But so initial scan to see if they were properly registered, reviewed the voter's information with them, and if they were, they got handed a signature card, which was their name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to look at one. I'm on the spot. The date, the oath, spot the signature for signature, a spot for the judge to mark ballot style, and type of ballot provided to them, I think.
Okay, great. I mean,
it's pretty short form, yeah.
And
if they if they we couldn't find them in the system, they were handed a clipboard and a form.
Gotcha, okay.
And that was only six of them. All, like, throughout the whole thing, we only had six
that were properly
same
registered?
Same-day voter registrations once the VSPCs opened.
And did others come in knowing they needed their address changed, so they just started with the form?
Oh, yeah. That happened, too.
Okay.
And that was how we handled it, too. We had a what we call voter card, and it is blue. And it really just is the date. And then when they check in, they hand over their whatever their identification is. We pull them up in the system, ask if it's the current, you know, ask them what their current address is. If they need to change, at that point, they get handed a form. If not, and this is kind of how OLVR and whatever, everything would already be updated, we would just issue DRE, which generates the label, and then the label, there's a spot to put the label on the little card. Then we hand that to the voter. They review to make sure that that's their correct address. They sign the affirmation, hand that back, and then the ballot is printed at our site or issued to them if it's inventory. So it's pretty quick. I mean, it's less than a minute, really, to process
to get
somebody.
That way.
So this is less business practice and more just what we saw on the voter side, but we had volunteers as part of the nonpartisan election protection program just getting experiences from voters. And it seems like, and this is really psychological, for a lot of voters, part of the issue was if they were asked, you know, what do you want to do or whatever, and they knew they were already registered and they either wanted to vote in person or wanted a replacement, and it bothered them to be given a voter registration form. So they felt like that's what they were being asked to do. And so it wasn't that they weren't willing to provide the information, but the here's a form, you have to register. They're like, but I'm already registered. So that just sort of vexed them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's
someone's
a formatting or
it.
A title, but that was one of the barriers we saw where it wasn't so much, you know, you could give them the same set of questions, but if it was a smaller piece of paper versus a larger, and if it was a voter information card versus a voter registration form, the voter felt much better about it, which
here's a half sheet.
Is a horrifying thing to say, but I think it is true in terms of how voters experience the process.
Yeah. And I know, I can speak for my county because we did use just one form. The thought was that everything was, like, we wouldn't have them sign the oath, the registration oath, but it was everything was right there on the one form because in my county, a majority of them did not know where they were registered.
So they have to give all that information anyway.
But the check-in process, and that's one of the things we're definitely looking at for next year is an initial check-in. Again, this is when you get to the line stage of things. If there's not, it's, yeah. So, Cynthia, how did you guys do it up there?
Well, we had originally planned on going with having the VSPC combination form. And then at the last minute, we found out we had to do signature cards, so we switched. So what we used was we used a signature card for everybody who voted in person. And for all the people who wanted to take their ballot off-site, we used the VSPC form. In retrospect, we'll probably change that. So we're looking at how we use our forms. So our signature card had, you know, all the information that was needed on it. So that's how we distinguished, and that's how we balanced.
That's good.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm listening to you guys and how you did it and contemplating.
Yeah, that's a kind of having the conversation.
Contemplating other ways.
Yeah.
We have to make the check-in process easier, and so that's what we're trying to look at. So.
Okay. Rudy, how about you guys up in Weld?
We had everybody complete a signature card upon arrival to the voter service and polling center, and then as soon as, because we're with you, Hillary, the voter didn't know if they were registered or not. So as soon as we pulled them up in score, then that was when the determination was made whether or not they've been registered. And if they weren't registered, we had them go to a separate table and fill out a new voter registration form.
Yeah. Okay.
Seemed to work pretty good.
And thoughts similarly for next year?
Yeah, we're going
to plans
it
to do it
the same way.
Yeah, because yep. That's the it's like how do you it's like that it's getting the line to divvy up right and get the quick ones through. It's the short version of that. What others on the phone? I just was curious about those counties who've been heard.
It's Lori.
Yep.
So everybody filled out a VSPC form when they got here, and we ascertained what they needed. If they wanted to vote in first person, they then filled out a signature card and showed their ID. Excuse me. But we the signature card was really simple to fill out, and if they were voting in person, they filled out a signature card, and we had everything all color-coded yellow.
And what do you remember what the signature card had on it? Was it just name?
Basically the affirmation, and then they just had their name, and their residential, and sign and date it.
Okay.
And then we, as judges, our staff would say what type of ID they presented. We would have the staff put like DL or something just to know that everybody checked it. And mm-hmm. then there was another couple things on there like which VSPC they were at, stuff like that.
And then their ballot.
In their ballots. Yeah, there's a place for the sticker. And we just put the sticker right out of score. We print two of them and put one right on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we did that too. I just remember that. We have a place where it's ID, so check. It basically tells the judge to check ID, and then they can indicate there if it was a DL or state ID or passport or whatever type it was.
Would you guys bring copies of those to conference with you? The little
sure.
show and tell table.
We sent ours. We sent ours to be approved at the Secretary of State's office, the one Joyce has had before, and we just made a few adjustments to it for the VSPC, and we also have it on our. The judge circles whether they want paper or DRE, so we can kind of keep it's better when we go at the end and then we know.
Yeah.
It's just another little check, you know, for us to balance. And we sent it to Dwight at the Secretary of State's office. They wanted a copy of it. I'm not sure what other county needed it or something, but we can certainly bring one.
That'd be great. Or a couple.
Yeah.
Thanks. Anybody else have anything to add? Different or learnings that would be benefit both this group and others? Okay.
Well, this is Renee,
mm-hmm.
and I guess basically been doing the same thing. We would look up the voter upon arrival rather than have them fill anything out. If their address needed updated, then they would fill out the VSPC form. If they wanted to vote in person, then we surrendered their ballot, issued early voting, printed a label, and had them sign a signature card. So we didn't utilize the VSPC form for anything other than new registrations or address changes. If they requested a replacement ballot, we just issued them a replacement ballot if all the address information was correct.
Gotcha. Just had to process that.
So we just made the voter not have to fill out forms if not necessary.
Yep. Okay. Appreciate that.
Okay.
I think that's one of those, I would like this group to, you know, not necessarily, after we also have the conversation at conference, but it would be great for us to go back and look at, we did that flow chart. Does it match up with what we said, and are there best practices, and then also how that fits with whatever technology we move towards as well. So another item that I would like us to weigh in on, and I don't think we'll have the answers today, but I think this group would be really useful in combination with, and I've talked with Trevor about this already also, is the site selection process. You know, what are the best practices? What are the things to keep in mind? Even if they seem obvious, because sometimes when you get pinched to find a location, sometimes the obvious things fall off the list. So we want to make sure, can we do a checklist similar to, you know, we use the ADA, but checklists, that obviously has to be part of it. In addition, you know, what are the other things to keep in mind? And then with that, what are the security and IT requirements? So kind of those three pieces of, from the voter experience, what do you want to keep in mind? From accessibility, what do you want to keep in mind? And then also from technology.
Yeah,
and I don't know if anybody has any of those already. It would be great to share them. We're going to have a session on talking about site selection. Yeah. Jed has.
So I have a comment real quick.
Mm-hmm.
In the years that I've been here, we've done ADA compliance checks. So we've gone around the state. And Faith and Lisa Duran from our office have taken the lead on that. It's a purely elections initiative, so this isn't an administrative from the administration side, but we're going to start taking that more and more seriously and pushing counties to become more in compliance with the ADA requirements, especially now that we're moving to fewer locations. So if you were a polling place county, we sort of understood that you might need 40 or 60 or 80 locations, and that might be a harder thing to pull off. But we're like, when I went through the Southwest and did my tour, Fran remembers this. I had an ADA checklist, and I went through and asked a lot of ADA questions, and that was sort of the precursor to what's going to come this next spring, which is letters. We're gonna write letters to counties that we believe are not ADA compliant with their main office, and then county where you have a polling place which is not ADA compliant. We're probably gonna find that out in the election, in the 14 election, and then 15 will be about addressing those as well. So that's gonna be a much bigger deal for us.
Okay.
It's something that we've sort of passively done as a consequence of our road trips, but now it's going to be more front burner. So that maybe will color the discussion.
Well, and that's, so. I mean, in my mind, that's what I see. It's like taking the ADA list that already exists, which I think is on the website.
Yeah, it's on the website.
Right. So that would be one of the pieces that you would use when you're selecting your site.
Also,
that would be my hope and maybe our recommendation.
We also have a training now, which is we've upgraded our training on ADA compliance, which is, I don't know if it's live now, but it was live before the election,
okay.
And it will be live very soon if it's not now.
Okay.
So, and I, you know, recommend that all the counties go back and look at that ADA training.
Okay, and I think it's probably when we talk site selection, having that conversation at conference and a reminder. I'm not sure what day we're doing that, but making sure that I will make sure that message gets communicated as part of that conversation.
I know in one of the, it's either the conference or at one of our regional meetings where we all sat down and we had great big sheets of paper and we sat down with site selections. We talked about transportation, about, you know, keeping all these things in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we've already done it once, but that's probably not a bad idea to go back in there and do that again. Perhaps we don't even have to have that rebuilt, because I know it was the statute that provided that.
Well, and there's statute that tells you what to look at as well. It's just then, are there other things that you guys, that we just naturally do because, you know,
I think one thing that I know Faith Gross talked about a lot is evaluating sites to make sure they're still compliant? Because oftentimes, it's, you know, it's easy to tell if a place is out of compliance because it structurally just doesn't meet the requirements. But oftentimes, over the course of the year, things will change, whether it's access to the parking lot or trees that are overgrown. There's all sorts of things that can shift a site's status. So maybe having some special focus on making sure that once you found good sites, what do you need to do to make sure that they're still accessible? Because that's something she often talked about. It wasn't just some sites weren't accessible, but that would change, and making sure that you're aware of that and can make modifications.
I think to your point, if you've used these places for early voting before, don't just, I mean, go through the same process with them, because also statute has different stuff in there as well.
It's required, but
yeah,
thinking about
exactly.
It.
Just remembering too, yeah.
It's also part of the rule now that you have to certify to us that each one of your voting locations is ADA compliant each year. So it's not, you don't have to just do it once, but you have to do it each year.
Right, great. So. That will, yeah, absolutely help with that too. So I think, so there'd be, I would see three components to site selection. One is the ADA checklist, and then if people want training to also help them with using that and what that means. Then there's what I'm calling other factors, which includes statute and then other items that clerks use to evaluate it. And then there's a whole technical and technical component as well. And I know that Trevor and their group had, he had been talking about working with Rich. I always want to call him Rick, but it's Rich.
Yeah, Rich.
on what that would be. And are there other pieces that, I mean, it seems like those are the big chunk, the big categories.
Yeah, I think that's right. The only thing that I would highlight from the bill or from statute now, the whole requirement to solicit public feedback. And I think that is something that some counties already do as part of their kind of standard practice. But that's probably new for others. So thinking through, like, how do you get useful, meaningful input from the public on locations, and how can that be, you know, rolled out in a consistent way across counties? Because that's probably new for some.
And we had something at summer conference on that, and I see us touching on that again during this conference as well. Of it may not be as thorough, I mean, not be as take up as much time as the last time, but just the reminders of that a public process is needed and what some of the options are around how that process works would be good. Anything else for site selection?
What about the VSPC being in the political subdivision in which the election is being held? Would that be something that would be added to
so
that
for list? The primary and the general, I think we'll be covered. It's the exceptions.
It's not required. Yeah.
And it's not currently required.
It's not currently required.
Yeah.
But
I think it's encouraged.
I was just thinking about
as a best practice
special
recommendation.
District elections that are coming up.
Mm-hmm. It could be a best practice.
So maybe we add that in as one of the items for that middle group, which I'm currently calling other factors that are both statute and will need a new name.
Everything else.
Yeah.
And I want to say, and I don't know if anyone from El Paso is on the line, but I want to say that during the recall election.
If that's Judd talking.
It is Judd.
I'm sorry. This is Judd. I want to say that El Paso County had a VSPC that was outside of the jurisdiction that encompassed the recall. But they had other locations inside, and so there certainly wasn't a problem with doing that. And, in fact, it might have made a lot of sense because I'm not sure where their main office was or where their, you know, subsidiary offices were. So so in some respects, it's
factor.
Not it's not necessarily a bad thing that it's not that way, but it is odd that it's not required that the VSPC be within the jurisdiction.
It's a factor to consider, especially if you have, you know, communities where people live and then where they work, right? Do you want to, I mean, I think it's just one of those to keep to the list.
And the main thing is connectivity, you know.
Yes,
I mean,
that's a huge.
I think out in the rural areas, I know I have several clerks that are very, very concerned about where they are going to put these at because they don't have connectivity. So they may be forced to do that.
You mean for May, the May elections?
Yeah. For the May, for elections in general. We're just talking just overall, generic.
The look on my face is that we didn't hear that from them when we were talking about the bill. So not that I don't doubt that it's true, but it's one of those where they're paying attention. So,
yeah, I can get your names.
Okay, good.
Well, the reason I bring it up is not because of El Paso County. It's we're trying to plan the May special district elections, and we have special mm-hmm. districts that are way outside of the city, like Beulah, Pueblo West, Avondale, which are, you know, 20 miles outside of the city center where our election department is. And in the past, we ran these elections as vote centers for the special district elections, and they've become accustomed to that service. I just think that with the new bill, I think it's important to work with these special districts and make sure that people aren't having to travel 30 miles to mm-hmm. get a replacement mm-hmm. ballot. And I think it should be a best practice, possibly, you know, not a rule or in law, in statute, but I think it's something that we should make the clerks aware of.
And I might not have said it very clear, but I think that will be one that we definitely put on the list of factors to keep in mind when making your selection at a minimum, and then we'll see where that goes from there. So the last area, I'm going to keep us on to five, because unless we're really fast at this, what are the metrics that we think are going to be important to measure for 2014, both long-term, determining how many of these VSPCs we actually need, and just, again, the intent at the beginning, and we'll have different legislatures and legislative sessions in between there, was that these numbers would stay the same through 16 to really give it a full cycle to see what those numbers are. So that's one of the metrics, like what do we need to include on that? How are we measuring that? What data needs to be collected to make that determination? And then what's the other data that we need to collect in 2014? And Stephen, do you mind popping over to the one that says 2013 data? Some of this is, you know, some of it's for planning purposes, right, for counties, and then some is, you know, what are the policy decisions that we need to make with that data? And I don't know if we have that answer. Maybe I won't keep us on till five. Maybe I'll leave us with this question. I don't know if we have that answer today, but it's something I think this group could be really helpful with in moving forward. And so maybe it is taking a look at the spreadsheet, seeing what data we already collected. There's a couple of reports that, Sheila, you worked with Vicki and her team to get produced.
Yeah, Kathy, actually.
Kathy did.
Overman. And Vicki was copied on them, though, so she's seen them as well.
Great. So maybe sending – would you mind sending those to – I don't know if they went to the business practice group or not. I think it would be –
No, I don't. I haven't sent them to anybody else.
I think it just went to the
commission,
maybe?
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I will send it out. It was vote method by county, by date, mm-hmm. which was really interesting. And then also volume of registrations, which I haven't confirmed with Kathy whether or not she included all updates in that number. We were trying to look at how many address changes and new registrations happened within each county. But the numbers that the state system pulled were a little higher than what we had here locally, so I still have a question on that one. Should I just send the voter method one out, the one that we know we're solid on?
Could you put estimate?
Yeah, why don't we put draft on that one, and that way, because then counties can also do some of their own internal comparison, and if there are differences,
right.
I think that'd be great to understand as ever with
why?
Data. I mean, there's mm-hmm. always a reason, it's just figuring out what that is, and they're usually good reasons,
right.
but just looking
there's
at
so
what
many variables
is.
On the back end of that data, like, you know, how
yeah.
you pull it,
yeah.
that it can
Absolutely.
Get complicated.
With the goal to be, how do we standardize that so we're getting and understanding those factors.
Well,
so.
Some of it's impossible to,
yeah.
because if you,
when you do this
if
thing.
You have a county-to-county move, where do you put the change? I mean, the do you count the change for the old county or to the new county? And are you only counting
right.
the change for the person that's in front of you? So is it only...
What would have been... Oh, I'm sorry,
sometimes you don't. Sometimes you don't know that. Like in SCORE, you wouldn't know, has the person gone to the old county and canceled? Or have they gone to a new county and been issued something?
Right. And because, so that might be something for us to decide what we're,
yeah.
how we're going to do it. And maybe it is just with the new county because... I don't know. So I think that'd be another round for us to look at those metrics.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point.
Another thing that would be really cool to know is how many people moved within the same ballot style area. Because a lot of the moves for here in Mesa,
we're a fairly large geographical area for the main school district, and the majority of our moves, they were within the same school district. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they would have got the same ballot either way.
Because of the particular content that was made up on that.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, that would be really cool, but we can't pull that kind of data yet. We don't have that sort of structure and score.
Yeah, I don't think.
Meaning they could have kept their original ballot, but I.
I know it's kind of you don't necessarily want to go there, yeah. But the end result would be the same. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't change their ballot style, therefore there was no question about on what date.
Yeah.
Yeah. About the only way you can do that is just on an Excel spreadsheet and keep track of it that way.
Yeah.
For smaller counties, that's possible.
Okay. So, any other burning metric ideas? Otherwise, let's review them, and then our last order of business will be to set our next meeting.
And I can't see that exactly, but I think that's the spreadsheet that we had from previous, right?
It is, and we added on some of the items that you collected as well and went out.
I know that there might be more on signature verification. I presented like three different metrics, but it seemed like the commission was pretty interested in some of that. And then they were also interested in what transpired to district attorney submittals, mm-hmm. if I remember right. Mm-hmm.
And I thought we had that on there, but I can't. I'll look at
that. And
that
kind of ties into the work that you've been doing with the DA group, because it seems like we refer a lot of things that probably don't need to be deferred over. So maybe some discussion on that, because that might be useful. And then I personally, we track a significant number of data as it relates to the performance and productivity of our ballot processing rooms, and I don't know if everybody's doing that, but like how many signatures get processed by, you know, per person in 1 hour, how many in prep, how many in counting, and that just all feeds into us planning for elections. So I'm assuming everybody's doing that in some way, but that might be useful too.
Okay. That'd be good. And if you guys have other thoughts, you know, write them up for me as well, and I'll have Joan take notes from this. So, you gotta go. Thanks, Jed. So the last item, let's look at, I would like us to jump on our idea that we had, which is doing a work session, taking a good chunk of time to both look at metrics as one of those pieces, and then also what's the process flow. And I really think it would be most successful if we got everybody in a room to do that, and in a room where we can, you know, sit. I don't know how we broadcast it or if we just tape it, Stephen, since we don't really have public participation. If that's something you could look into. I mean, my preference would be maybe we meet at Denver where we can pop up score and actually look through it and go through the process and, you know, do the clicks. And if people want to come in person, that's great. And then the rest we may record it like when we went there last time. Is that possible?
That would work.
Possible?
If the meetings in Denver was very accommodating to us last time, allowing us to use their recording equipment. So. Mm-hmm.
That, okay. And then so with that in mind, this is scary that my calendar's already filling. Could you guys look at either the 9th or the 15th of January?
15th
won't? You have UBS.
It's 13th through the 16th for UBS.
Wow, the whole thing, huh?
Well, it's 13th through the 15th, and then the 16th is the final visit for this part, not the public participation, but.
Okay, so maybe Denver, looking at what your guys' available is, either the 9th or the 10th?
I'm gone the 9th
and 10th. Okay, mm-hmm. So we will be hopping to,
the 13th, I guess, works great for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, there might just need to be a group, and you all on UBS, you know, if you need a break, you could come on over.
I don't think there's any break.
No, I was just kidding. I was being optimistic for you. Does the 15th work for you guys, Amber?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Amber, how about you and I talk offline, and we'll figure out, like, how long we think that would be. But so what about others on the phone? Really, if we can get you in the room, I know some of you are coming from far away, so that may not be making the request, but
Well, make the request. You can make the determination. But it would be really great, and maybe we can also maybe do a webinar if we can't get everybody there.
You're saying the 17th?
Actually, the 15th.
15th?
I know you guys. Well, I guess actually, if we did it on the, does the 17th work? I know we have a lot of set up legislative meetings.
But I know I just looked at that earlier today for the UVS Commission or Advisory Committee, and I was booked on Thursday and Friday that week, and I'm in Denver with them on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate part is we're going to have to move forward with both tracks, and this is the downside of, and maybe we open it up. Maybe we invite some other counties so that we're getting that cross information as well.
That would be fine.
That'd be great.
I mean, I love you. And, you know, to have you guys then weigh in at the next phase might work on that.
We're fine. I'm fine with that.
I know. I just appreciate you guys chiming in.
It's too hard to get everybody together. So
it is indeed.
We understand.
What about...
And it's like the same volunteer group for like every... in every little circle. So it's super tough.
What about others on the phone? Could you guys make the 15th? And it would be... I mean, if not all day, a good portion of it, I would think. Do you want to, do I still have you guys on the phone?
Yeah, I should be able to make it. It's Rudy from Well County.
Okay, that would be great. And we'll set, right now, if you can block the full, you know, 9 to 4 time period, and then we'll figure out exactly what we need. The goal really is to be efficient, but also to just get it done. What about Cynthia? Do you need to check that or...
I need to check because I know I have a meeting scheduled right now. It's just whether I can move that, you know. So I just need to check, but I can get back with you guys if that's what we end up with. So,
okay.
Definitely.
Hillary, this is Joyce and Lori. Did you say the 15th?
I did.
Okay. Well, you know, if South Park is good, we will try our best to get there.
Well, and we'll also look at... You know, I was more putting pressure on those that are kind of far, but not like over Mountain Pass and, you know, through 30 feet of snow was really what my pressure was about. We would really love anyone to come in person. And then we can also set up a webinar portion for it as well. And, I mean, we can use minor partners on that. So
if the weather's not bad, we don't mind coming. But if the weather's just, you know, a little bad, I won't go. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. So. Again, it's weather dependent. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Delta sentiments as well.
I was going to say, Renee, you're probably in that boat as well.
Right. Yeah.
And no blizzards on the plains, all of those things as well.
Correct.
So. Okay. Well, we'll look at setting that up on the 15th, so if you guys can mark your calendar. And then I'll also plant some other dates in an email, a follow-up email from this meeting on those. There won't be any between now and the end of the year, so... I know, as disappointed as you all were. So on that note, I really want to thank you all for all of the work and effort that you have done. Really appreciate it and wish you all a happy holiday. And we will continue. Do look for some emails before the new year, but we will continue as a group speaking in the new year. Thank you all.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lori.